So today we're live at the Business of Software Conference and recording this podcast, which is really funny because we're recording a live podcast, but it's pre-recorded, so you're obviously not listening to it while we do this.
And the other weird thing is Mike and I are sitting right next to each other, and you'd think that somehow we could just both record into the same machine, but we would need a mixer, other hardware. So we are actually sitting 2 feet away from each other, and we have connected via Skype. And then Mike's recording on his laptop. I'm talking on my iPhone because I forgot my headset. So
you sound terrible, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I gave my talk this morning. Well, I guess I should step back a little bit. Well, the day before I left California, it was 100 degrees. It was very nice. And dry heat, of course, as Mike likes to hear me say. And then get to Boston, it's 55 degrees and it's raining like crazy. And so sure enough, the voice goes, you know, I just got some kind of cold or something. And because we're yelling, you're kind of yelling over people because there's 100 people in a room all the time. Yeah, so then I had this voice for my talk this morning, which I was a little concerned about, but it turned out that everything went fine. So,
Cool. So what we're going to do today is we're actually calling this episode 25.5 or 25 and a half, because we usually record a couple of episodes in advance, and we've decided that we're just going to squeeze this one in, and it's going to be a lot more off the cuff. We're probably not going to do very much editing, so please forgive us for that, but we'll just blame Rob.
Indeed. We always do that, so that's a good plan. Well, cool. Do we want to just kind of talk through a few of the speakers?
Sure. Because
there's been some really good talks. So the keynote yesterday was Seth Godin, and he had an hour talk. And I always wind up feeling really motivated after listening to Seth. He makes so much sense. I do have one hang up, of course. I don't know what the heck to do after hearing him. Like, I'm really excited, but I don't know what to do. You know, I want to like, what are my action points? So I almost feel like I need to discuss it with someone to be like, what does that mean to me? You know, how does that change what I do?
I think that's interesting just because this is the first time that I've heard him speak, you know, in person. I've heard him on a couple of podcasts, but I've never seen him in person. I have very strong recollections. And as you said, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. No, he is super. I mean, he is a fantastic presenter and a smart guy. So, you know, what's neat is I didn't realize he had a background in software. He had started a few web companies, but like he started some downloadable software stuff in the 80s. And so he really does have a decent knowledge of what we do. It wasn't just some marketing guy coming to talk about our stuff.
That was surprising to me as well. I didn't realize he had any experience with programming either. I thought he was just the quote unquote brilliant marketer. And that was not necessarily the end of it, but you know, I almost felt like he was a writer, a marketer first, as opposed to, you know, having that development background and ideas and everything.
Yeah, like the entrepreneurship. So one of the things he said that I've heard some people kind of murmuring about is Seth said, in essence, if you can spec something, if you can write it down, then outsource it. And that you don't need great developers is what he kind of said. And he was implying that he's hired 6 people for Squidoo. And he said, you know, it gets a lot of traffic for only having 6 employees. And he said, yeah, anything that we can spec, people can do cheaper elsewhere. And so the stuff that my employees do is really complicated, and it's stuff you have to be really good to do. I guess he wasn't necessarily saying don't hire great programmers, but at one point he said that exact phrase, like you don't need great programmers to put out good enough software. And I kind of heard some murmurs about that and people saying, well, that's not what Joel said, you know? Is that what you took away from the talk, or
did I make it up? No, I found that, you said it exactly right. And I found that interesting as well, because you're right. There were kind of murmurs that went through the crowd when he said that. And I don't think he meant it as a slight against Joel. It's just that, you know, leading into another talk that was from Jason Cohen, one of the things that I took away from his talk was that, you know, you'll hear different advice from different people. And although it worked for each of them, it may or may not work for you. And it's great that Joel was able to hire, you know, the quote unquote best programmers. And, you know, obviously Seth feels that he doesn't need to, and he makes it work, and Joel makes it work. And the best part about that is that it further illustrates that there's no one right way to do anything. There's a lot of things that you can do. There's a lot of things that you can try. And it's quite possible that all of them could work depending on the exact situation that you're in. So you almost have to just try different things and see what works for you. And part of it's going to be based on your personality or your relationship with the people that you're working with.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Jason Cohen's talk. I mean, it was all about filtering all of the advice and information we get from books and blogs and in person. And basically, he told some great anecdotes about how he read advice, he tried it, and, you know, it didn't work for him. And then he tried the exact opposite, and essentially it worked. And he said, what this means is it doesn't matter what you do. None of these factors had a real play in this. Success is something, some other pivot point. he basically was like, when you receive advice from 37 Signals and it's the opposite of what Joel says, it's because they're in different mindsets, like B2B versus B2C, rich or king. There's all these kind of yin and yangs that, you know, I thought was really interesting. So that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly an eye-opening way that he put that. You know, depending on whether you're selling B2B software, B2C, or and coupled with whether or not you want to be rich or do you want to be king. And he had great examples for each of those different quadrants on the graph. And it was just very eye-opening to see something like that put in that way.
I agree. And to think when someone gives me advice, think if they're, you know, if I'm B2C and I want to be king, then you probably don't want to listen to someone who's B2B and wants to be rich and wants to sell their company.
Mm-hmm.
So that was neat. And then let's see, Dharmesh Shah spoke yesterday from onstartups.com. I also really enjoyed his talk. I don't want to sound like a broken record here saying I really enjoyed him, but there's some fantastic talks. Actually, I feel like I like the talks this year more than I did last year. But Dharmesh basically, he went through lessons learned that are non-obvious from his company HubSpot over the past couple of years. And he went into some detailed stuff about this thing called CHI, which is the Customer Happiness Index.
Customer Happiness Index. I found that really, that was just amazing, the metrics that they keep on it. I mean, because what they do is they basically have got all these measurements and metrics that they're taking from customers, and they're looking at past customers and new customers, and they can almost tell you when a customer is going to cancel, when they're unhappy. And what they do is they're proactive about that, and they basically identify the customers who they think are unhappy and call them and say, "We think you're unhappy. How can we change this?" Which is just, that just blows me away. I mean, that's amazing that a company is that proactive about that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's when you base it on metrics and you have a lot of, well, he said there's these 7 MBAs or something there, and then there's developers as well, so they know how to manage the data. But that was just one example. He had like 6 where it was like, oh man, I totally need to do that, you know? We heard Paul Kenny talk this morning about sales.
Yep.
And actually, I only caught part of it because I was busy preparing for my talk. I got more out of it than I thought I would.
Yeah.
You know, I don't do in-person sales or like even phone sales, but I kind of learned about the process. It was eye-opening. What did you think, Mike? You have more, you know, kind of insight into that world.
Yeah, the talk by Paul Kenny was a little bit different than, you know, how I deal with sales, but the basic concepts and ideas were the same. I mean, I was listening to his talk and thinking to myself, man, I almost feel like I'm a sales guy trapped in a developer's body.
Interesting.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm very experienced at that. I know how to talk to people, and I can. And I mean, and as Jason Cohen said, he felt that he was the best sales rep for his company because he knew the product inside and out. He knew the space. He knew the problems themselves that the customers were experiencing. And when you get a sales rep in there who can speak directly to those problems, they basically make the best salesperson. And it just kind of makes me realize that, you know, in my business moving forward, I'm probably going to be the best sales rep. And I've actually heard that from Bill Byther from Italisoft. I was talking to him. He said his developers, the people he's taken who were developers and changed them into, you know, marketers or sales reps. He's like, those guys are my top-notch sales guys. I mean, they can talk to the developers because they basically sell a toolkit for .NET developers. Well, naturally, a developer is going to make a great sales rep for that because you're selling it to other developers and you're going to be able to talk to them. And if somebody says, well, what happens when, you know, this sort of thing throws an exception, and the sales rep's going to sit there and look at him like a deer in headlights, whereas the developer, who's also a sales rep, is going to be able to just rattle those answers off and be able to do it. So I think it's more just a matter of getting over your fear of doing sales. And as long as you can find a process that works for you, then you'll do extremely well at it.
And that was actually kind of enlightening because I know Jason Cohen, and he said I'm a geek, I'm a programmer, and I'm not outgoing, and I'm, you know, kind of introspective and a lot of stuff. And he said, but I had no problem selling my software because it was so good. Like, he knew it was good and he knew they needed it. And that was really eye-opening. It's like, oh, like having confidence in your software. I mean, we all know we're building apps that provide value to people. If that's all I need to do, and I think that's what Paul Kenny was saying, he's like, it's not forcing stuff down people's throats. It's like if your app really does help them and you're not trying to put one over on them or force them to buy something they don't want, it's easy because you're just talking to people. You know, you're talking to people and you're actually going to be helping them out. And if you really believe that, then you can be a good salesperson and a developer at the same time.
Although how much time you have for actually doing writing
that's
code is a little debatable.
Yep. No, I agree.
as the owner of your business, I mean, what you're really trying to do is you're trying to manage all of the different things that are going on. I mean, if you're trying to do absolutely everything, and I guess that probably applies a lot more to companies that build up a little bit, you know, have multiple employees. But if you're trying to do absolutely everything and stay on top of, you know, everything as well as you would, you know, you're not going to do as well. I mean, even Rob doesn't do everything himself. I mean, he outsources a lot of things. He basically writes down the process and does those sorts of things, and then, you know, outsources those things to other people and basically acts as a manager, you know, the ship's captain, so to speak. And that's what you have to do, whether you've got a one-person gig or a 50 or, in Dharmesh's case, like 180.
Let's see, another talk from yesterday was Eric Ries, and he talked about lean startup methodology. I had heard all of that. I mean, it was basically just an overview of it. And so I've heard him on podcasts before. I was a little disappointed there wasn't kind of new info, but I think he probably played to the audience because it was probably a smart move. I don't think everyone's heard about it. There was a little grumbling in the audience because it's kind of that next, he's kind of pushing things forward, I think. And I don't know if we'll all get there eventually. I mean, I guess time will tell. The lean startup methodology really makes people uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable to think about this constant deployment where you just check in a change and it goes through QA automated and it goes out to the server, kind of, you know, gives us developers the willies a little bit. I think that if you go for lean startup, you can't go 80%. I feel like you have to go all the way or else it's not going to work. What was your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thought, though. I mean, he kind of indicated that in his talk, that unless you go all the way with it, unless you are willing to commit 100%, things are going to start to fall through the cracks. And it seems to me like that's a huge investment. And apparently the numbers are paying off for them. So it almost makes me question my own beliefs, because, I mean, obviously there's stuff that you've done before and stuff that I've done before, and we're like, well, I'm pretty sure I know how this is going to turn out, but I'm going to test it anyway. And you test it, and you're just surprised. I mean, things are different. Things are not what you expected. So I don't know. I would give it a shot. I mean, to be perfectly honest. And, you know, I may very well for my product that is coming out in 8 to 12 weeks.
12 weeks, baby. Yeah, I think agile development was similar to this for me, even, you know, what, 7 years ago or something. I mean, when it came out, I was like, there's no way that can work, you know, just because I was a consultant, and it actually wouldn't have worked very well for the models that we were exploring. But I now, kind of in retrospect, the more you see people do agile development, it's like, oh, yeah, this just makes perfect sense, right? I mean, why weren't we doing this all along? And I wonder if, you know, lean startup will eventually be what kind of how we all do our startups.
So we also heard Peldy talk earlier today. That was pretty interesting. It was definitely, you could sense the honesty. I mean, and that was the nice part about it. I mean, he was talking a lot about his various fears, whether it was actually just launching the company itself or even talking in front of us. I mean, he told us flat out. He said, you know, I'm afraid to be here. and it was just very, you know, interesting to see that perspective from somebody who, you know, a lot of us look up to. But at the same time, he's a little bit, you know, I don't want to say insecure, really, but he's kind of fearful of what people think. Is he going to screw up? Is he going to do well? And it's important to most people that they do well. So what was your take on the talk?
Yeah, I liked it. I had heard some of it. He's talked about it at other talks, and I've seen videos of it. But it's always refreshing. I mean, he's a funny guy, which, of course, makes the talk really interesting. His content was good. I mean, I don't know that I took anything away from it that I'm going to, you know, go home and implement, but it's always fun. He was inspiring, absolutely.
I like that he was a Steve Martin fan.
That was cool. Yeah, he showed a couple videos. I actually just listened to Steve Martin's, that book. It's his memoirs called Born Standing Up, and I got a lot out of it. It was a lot about the creative process and trial and error.
And then your talk earlier, were you scared?
You know,
did you cry like a schoolgirl?
Like a schoolgirl. I was surprised at how nervous I was last night. I had trouble sleeping, which I don't typically do. Like, I'm typically pretty even keeled about this stuff, but I had a real tough time going to bed. Yeah, I was, I certainly felt good. I felt relaxed once I got up there and started talking. My talk was quite a bit different than everyone else's. Basically, I went into heavy detail. I think it was well received. I've gotten compliments. I don't know, you, Mike, in the audience, you would have a better idea. Be honest.
I think you were going to cry like a schoolgirl.
That's, wait a minute.
No, I thought it was actually very good. And I'm not just saying that. I think that what was really beneficial to the audience was that you had hard numbers to back it up. It wasn't as if, I mean, when you start talking about marketing and how to do things on your website and, you know, how to please customers and get them to come back and get them to buy, you know, there's always these very fluffy things that people kind of say, fluffy ideas that people have. They're like, oh, you should try this or you should try that. And you actually had like hard concrete numbers to like back things up. You were able to say, look, if you look at the number of people who come to your site and buy something and they buy the first time they go there versus the number of people who come back to your website and buy on the second or third or fifth visit back to your site, you know, the conversion rate is exponentially higher, and not just a little bit higher, like exponentially higher. I mean, that right there was eye-opening. You said numbers out there anywhere from 450% to 1,600% higher for return visitors to buy versus those first timers. So the goal, and you know, from your talk, was to get those people to come back to your site. That's the goal of your website, especially for those higher priced products. And it's not to sell them on their first visit. Your goal is to get them to come back and continue coming back. And it was great to see that you had numbers. Developers like math and, you know, like ones and zeros and tens and twenties and fifties and hundreds. But it was just very inspirational and nice to see that you had the numbers to back it up. It wasn't just marketing fluff.
Nah, cool. Well, good. That was my intent. I knew going into this that with guys like Seth Godin and Peldy and some others, that they're great speakers, but they tend to talk about high level stuff that's really inspirational. And I basically took the opposite tact of that and just went drilled way down in and gave some, you know, actionable advice. And so it seems like it was received well. I'm pretty happy with how it came off. We're looking forward to Eric Sink this afternoon, and then tomorrow morning, Dan Bricklin. And, you know, Dan Bricklin did VisiCalc for the Apple. He was one of the early developers. And then Derek Sivers and, of course, Joel Spolsky wraps up the conference.
So that pretty much wraps it up for this episode. I think it's going to get loud in here as people start to go to the breakout session. So, you know, apologize for the lack of formatting on this particular episode, but it is sort of live, and we're first time for this one. If you remember from our first couple of episodes, they were a little choppy, I'll say. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time in episode 26.